Blog Talk Radio.
Company with Gray Eyes Smith, and you're listening to a show that's brought to you by a group on allpoetry.com called Late Night Poets, and we have anthologies available on amazon.com, so feel free to check those out. It's under the same moniker And they're books that are hardcover and filled with poetry from around the world, so feel free to check those out and help support these shows. And tonight's show is brought to you by the blanket permission list. So that's given us blanket permission to read on air. And, so that said, I'm going to grab a studio here. And we have one caller. Hello, Pam Ray. Welcome to the show.
Good to be here. Hi, Gray. How's it going?
I'm good, thank you. And how are you?
I am doing good. I'm doing good. Had a nice, relaxing day. Tomorrow, my baby turns 14. So
wow,
time goes by fast. Yes, and I told her she's in charge of the day. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's awesome. Congratulations, Pam. And to your daughter. Okay,
yeah,
so I posted the first one, if you wouldn't mind,
okay.
Please, Pam.
I would be happy to. Hiawatha by A Comet's Tale. And it goes like this. Hiawatha walks the trails of Longfellow's writing muse, peering out of the author's cloud-white, sparkling blue eyes, launching his birch canoe on the waves of poetic prose, paddling ever westward to the rhythm and sound of words, an Iroquois fictionally spun into Wadsworth's heroic tale to create a sense of pride and historical remembrance. In Henry's token of kinship, an arrow notch mark to uplift with equality a Native American man. End poem.
Beautiful read, Pam. And this was a lovely tribute to the poem Hiawatha from Longfellow. It ticks all the boxes in regards to what a beautiful poem that is. And, I really thought it was fabulously presented in this epic rite of Hiawatha. So beautiful job and a great read, Pam. What did you think, Pam?
Well, I have to agree with you. You know, I just thought, my first thought was, well, you know, I like the way he paid tribute to Hiawatha, the poem, and to Henry Longfellow's work. But, you know, kept his poem short, you know, and really just very straightforward style. I like that he says, I like this all the way through, but especially launching his birch canoe on the waves of poetic prose. So he pays tribute to the prose within the poetry, the story, but also gives nod to the birch made canoes that were used in that time period. I also like the phrase, create a sense of pride and historical remembrance. It definitely is one of the, I think, most influential and beautiful classical works that, you know, around in history, as far as telling a story and keeping a meter. So excellent right here and very well done.
Fantastic. Okay, I've got the next poem up. This is by Adrian 41062. It's called Music Brings Sweet Memories. Music always has been and always will be my first love. When you find it truly, it hits you like a boxing glove. Every crochet and quaver, just put your head back and savor. Piece of music in my head, in the chasms of my mind and bed. I listen to the words touching my soul, songs, every happy and sad moments we've had. Such depth, my spirit sings with passion. Sing the words, emotions flow from this launch pad. My body bends to every single note. Strange remembering every word wrote. Emotions from history, showing our love bare of memories of lovely times we shared. And beautiful job. I really liked it. It was very touching, and how much effect music has on our lives when we remember moments, happy and sad, because of the music that's being played. Just a beautiful tribute to music itself. What do you think, Pam?
I have to agree. You know, this is a wonderful tribute to music. I really like music, always has been and always will be my first love. I like how he talks about how music emotionally moves us, and not just emotionally moves us, but, you know, intellectually too. Like, what is that they, I think I read before, and that, you know, that the when fetuses inside the womb or babies inside the womb listen to music, they react to it. And I like how it touches on the idea that oftentimes we connect moments in our life and throughout history based on the music that was playing at that time. So just a beautiful write here and very well done.
That was a great comment. Thank you. We've got the next poem here. And I will push this to the board. And once you see this, could you give it a read, Pam, please?
Absolutely.
That's great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. There we go. The Accused by Amethyst Moonjade. And it goes like this. She stood in the square, her hands tied behind her. She was waiting under guard for the stocks to be opened. She was sentenced for 3 days in the stocks unless she recanted. Then she would be dunked on the dunking stool. The dunking stool was specifically used for women. It was a chair which was hung from the end of a free-moving arm. If she was strapped into the chair, which was by the side of a river or pond, it would then be hung over the water by the use of the arm. She would be ducked into the freezing cold liquid. The length of immersion was decided by the operator and the crime of which the woman was accused. In some circumstances, this punishment process could be repeated over the course of a day. She chose the stocks. She stood the risk of rocks being thrown instead of rotten vegetables, but it was a chance she was willing to take. 3 days of torture was preferable to possible drowning. Where there was life, there was hope, her granny used to say. Her crime was different. She had bright red hair and lots of freckles. It was well known that redheads were preferred by the devil. Since this was just her first offense, with no credible witnesses against her, she had her choice of punishment. None of it was her fault. She happened to be cursed by being a redhead where it was not appropriate, where they were sure witches were prevalent and they had to smoke them out. Some were wealthy widows with no family left to protect them. Some were just old women with no home or place to stay. Therefore, an easy target, land, greed, and power were at the root of most of the accusations. They needed to find the guilty because of the plague or famine to help control the population during crisis. The church bought into this because it helped to control a restless population in fear. Redheads were easy targets. She served her 3 days and was warned against sinning again. Just exactly that was they didn't say, but she knew she was known to them and now could be accused of anything at any time. End poem.
Beautiful read, Pam. And this is a fascinating storyline. And I mean, in her author's note, she says, redheaded women were especially suspected of being in league with witches and demons in the early and middle England periods. Wow, how fascinating is that? Just being a redhead could have you tortured and put in the stockade. I thought it was just a fabulous, harrowing, right? What did you think, Pam?
It is. I knew that fact. I had read it before, but it's really interesting to see it played out in a write. Now, I will admit that the picture kind of threw me off because, honestly, that looks like something we might do if we got drunk in Wisconsin. Like, it looks like some sort of, like, made-up ride. But I like this story. And she puts so much fact in here, and I like that she delves into that history. Because it was a time of one of the many times of great sorrow in history where the people had to live in constant fear because there was these constant accusations and a redhead born with a birthmark, and people who, used information against people simply to control their land and their money. I really liked this all the way through, but I do like where she says her crime was different. She had bright red hair and lots of freckles, and where it mentions they need to find the guilty because of the plague or famine to help control the population during crises. The church bought into this because it helped to control a restless population in fear. It's just a horrifying thing that when you give in to the masses because they've gone into a panic, what can occur. So just an excellent write and very well done.
Great comment. Thank you, Pam. Okay, I've got the next poem up, and this is by Andrew Bittman, and it's called The Happiness Theory. What does it mean to be happy? Does happiness come from being around the right people? Does it come from the quality of one's life? Does it come from life fully examined? Or does it come from the life unexamined? Perhaps the joy people find once they realize that everything that ever has happened to them has occurred with a purpose or a reason, that serendipity pursues those who actively seek it. Because happiness is not a formula, but rather the complete surrender to the unknown and the acceptance of even the unfortunate as a blessing. Well, that's an impactful statement. I mean, you have to look at life with all of its ups and downs and love it as it comes to you. So that's the only way to treat happiness. And I thought it was just a fabulous poem on the subject of happiness. What did you think, Pam?
Yeah, this is beautifully written. I like how there's, through some of the lines, the questions, there's that space, so that you pause between each question. Does it come from the quality of one's life? Does it come from the fullness, fully examined, or does it come from the life unexamined? Very philosophical questions. And I like how he answers this with a perhaps. Perhaps the joy people find once they realize that everything they have that has ever happened to them has occurred with a purpose or a reason. And I like the word perhaps being added in there because he's not saying this is for sure. This is how it is because I say this is how it is. He's saying perhaps this is what we need to think about. We need to think about that there, is a higher power, a blessing, a purpose for our life. And each thing that happens leads us to that purpose. So very thoughtful, very philosophical, and well done.
Absolutely. Great comment, Pam. Okay, I've got the next poem up, and it's by Babbler. It's called Puppet Tears, and she has a SoundCloud, so I'll play this.
Puppet Tears. Awake from reality into this dream. Or should I say nightmare, where I rise, avert my gaze in the glass, and scrub salted vestiges of hope from my skin and teeth. They cling to me pitifully, blood-staining pipes as they slip into blackwater canyons where everything valuable disintegrates. I smother my prideful, bulging midriff and offensively full bosom in the shame of a size starting with X, the most negative letter of the English alphabet. Curls scream songs into my ears, eulogizing last night's escape, remembering rough fingers snaking through the ringlets between my thighs. I murder them with a comb. Air-conditioned prison cells and Muzak silence the screams further, where, for at least 8 hours, lists of fabricated urgency get ticked off, making the men upstairs more green to subsidize the golf club swinging parole they call retirement, wringing my youth out as they did theirs for the privilege of pleated slacks. Aren't I a good little monkey, Unky Sam? Look at all the little trickies I can do. Another banana, please. In midnight sewer runs, real life bares its teeth, flinging shit at the hands above golf puppets, holding strange men to my naked breasts to suckle with no intention of marriage, no guilt. Rendezvous imprinted in the back of my mind, lending just enough purpose to keep breathing. The machine has not found a way to the oasis, yet. Once that parapet has fallen, so too will the last vestiges of my reality. Last acre of browning grass stitched over with day-glow astroturf. Where grass is greener, but made of plastic. Once hungry eyes of cattle are fed tallow, watching, doe-eyed, as nightmares string up my humanity's corpse, held aloft by wiggling mechanical fingers, stained with the shit of a new generation. Dance, monkey. Dance. End poem.
Wow. I mean, you know, this is fantastic. It really speaks to the tortured life of this person and how they feel like a monkey in that life, dancing for their puppet master. It's just a haunting poem full of introspection and revelation. Just a beautiful poem and an excellent read as well, Babbler. What did you think, Pam?
Yeah, this is powerful. It really hits hard. I think, to me, it strongly speaks on the idea of prostitution and of human slave market that even happens nowadays. There's a definite thought to the idea of someone being used for the purpose of other people's pleasures. You brought up the imagery of the idea of feeling like a monkey that's dancing. And, you can imagine, at least I can, the monkeys that used to dance when the organ grinder would play, and they used to have, like, the dancing monkeys, the dancing bears, you know, all kinds, you know, animals that are used for the were used solely for the purpose of entertainment and taken from their natural environment. And to me, that makes her a good metaphor for the idea of sex being taken out of its natural environment, which is, you know, love and pleasure, and being put into an environment where it becomes unnatural, which is, you know, rape and you know, a taking away of personal choice. Just a brilliant imagery and metaphors. And Midnight Sewer Runs, real life bears its teeth, finding shit at the hands of above golf puppet, holding strange men to my naked breast to suckle with no intention of marriage. Really emotive and powerful and very well done.
Very astute comment. Thank you, Pam. Okay, I've got the next write-up, if you wouldn't mind, please, Pam.
I would be happy to. All right. And up next we have Moods of My Many Poems by Becky Upchurch. Words like humidity are watered-down fists or praying hands, whichever the mood a poem forms. To wipe my emotional brow, sweating it out in ink, a side version of poet, the human one, shy or bold, opining or whining, mood dictates pens, keyboards, legal pads, size, and color. Just never run out. We've too many gray skies pushing us down. Look at the trees. Heavy, wet air, hot breath, similar in capitals everywhere. Release slowly oozes out the intent of mood cataloging. Thousands of poems that talk back in wonderment. Some definitely are whining. End poem.
Beautiful read, Pam. And this is a hard-hitting poem on the subject of poetry and its role in our lives. You know, we cry and we laugh and we pen all this down so that it can connect with other people. And, you know, hopefully they find something in it that was meant to be. And, you know, poetry has rescued many from losing themselves to wine or rage. You know, it's just a hard-hitting poem on the subject of poetry and its role in our lives. And what did you think, Pam?
You know, I have to agree with you. It is a really hard-hitting poem. I like how it reminds us that oftentimes what comes out in the words, it's almost like a circle, and the idea that, you know, sometimes we write because we specifically feel something, and then sometimes we start to write and a new feeling comes to us. I like, to me, that the ending was it was amusing and humorous, where it says, you know, thousands of poems that talk back in wonderment, some are definitely whining. And I have to agree that I think we all have those poems where we are just having pity parties and we want to get it out. I also like at the beginning where she says words like humidity are watered down fists. It's a wonderful way to get anger out without hurting ourselves or without hurting other people. You know, we just simply allow it to flow out in our words. So excellent write and very well done.
That's a great comment, Pam. Thank you. Okay, I've got the next poem up. It's called Bait, and it's by Blues Man. She knew what she was doing when she hopped out of the car. Thunder clapped, lightning flashed, but her home was still too far. An evening gown so sheer would drive any man insane. For me to have her on her arm would take caviar and champagne. Her body swayed like trees in the wind as the storm clouds filled the sky. Rain came down, transforming her gown into the silhouette, made me cry. Under a light on this stormy night, I reached out my trembling hand. Through the rain, I could see her pain. I stilled my heart and formed a plan. I won't bite if you stay the night, she smiled and coyly said. If done right, I won't mind a bite in the safety of your satin bed. She laughed and said, don't worry, you'll never hear me complain. Whenever I feel the need for a man, I just wear this rag in the rain. And poem. And in the author's note, it says, he wrote to prompt 4, I want a red dress. I want it flimsy and cheap. I want it too tight. I want to wear it until somebody tears it off me. I want it sleeveless and backless. This dress, so no one has to guess what's underneath. And, you know, he did a fantastic job to the prompt. I mean, you know, it really captivates you. It's what she's wearing when she gets out of the car. The lightning flashing, the thunder's clapping. And then, you know, the rain, the storm clouds filled the air, the sky, rain came down, transforming her gown, and the silhouette that made me cry. I mean, you can picture all this as you read it. So it's a fantastic job, Blues Man. And what did you think, Pam?
Yeah, I thought this, well, first of all, wonderful rhyme and flow. Blues Man always does a great job of writing metered poetry. You know, I thought this was a great take on that particular prompt. I liked the imagery, and her body swayed like trees in the wind as the storm clouds filled the sky. Rain came down, transforming her gown, and then the silhouette made me cry. And, you know, it's funny, very amusing at the end with her reply. You know, she laughed and said, don't worry, you'll never hear me complain. Whenever I feel the need for a man, I just wear this rag in the rain. The whole idea that, you know, he was trying to be a gentleman, you know, obviously interested, but a gentleman. And all along, she knew exactly what she was doing. So excellent, right? Very clever.
Thank you, Pam. Great comment. Yeah, I've got the next poem up. It's called Again and Again by Budo, and he has a SoundCloud for it, so I will play it.
Canada.
I can read between the lines and feel the bold winter cold. In a bluster, he's a sigh again and again. I can listen to your lies, not my head and my pretend, but I know the truth resides in the wrath of northern wind. How I wish that it could be what it was if it were real. All those times I spent with you is an honest appeal. But I know the game is played to begin and end to end. As the winner takes the spoils over and over again. So it never ends. Yes, it never ends. But you can win. So you leave behind a wake where I ride until I drown. An emotional undertow that pulls me deeper down. Till the light is all but gone and the darkness sighs aloud to carry me in chaos in an all-ensnaring shroud. So it never ends. Yes, it never ends. When you can win. So it never ends. Yes, it never ends. With no letters to send.
Beautifully done. Beautiful. I love the singing and the guitar. You know, you composed a beautiful song here, very sad and melancholic, but full of passionately written and passionately portrayed. Just a fabulous write, Ludo. Great job. Pam, what did you think?
Oh, I have to agree with you. It's always a treat to hear a recording done by Ludo. He's very talented when it comes to music. You know, there's some songs, and probably quite a few of them actually, where you can listen to, like, I could listen to the song being hummed and played on the guitar, and it would still move me. There is something so haunting about the rhythm of it. But the lyrics add an extra level, It makes me think about the whole idea of how some people play games emotionally and how, you know, you keep dealing with over and over again in the hopes that they'll change. I really like the "so it never ends, yes, it never ends when you can't win." You know, the two people who are constantly trying to win each argument and never get anywhere. So you leave behind a wake where I ride until I drown, an emotional undertow that pulls me deeper down. That is powerful and emotive imagery and an excellent write on the whole idea of just walking away from the games that people play. So very well done.
Absolutely wonderful comment, Dan. Thank you. Okay, I've got the next poem up, if you wouldn't mind, please, Pam.
I would be happy to. The Moment by C.L. Howard. And it goes like this. In the old green wood near my home, one day I was quite alone. I sat upon an ancient mossy rock, and as day surrendered to the night, its lonely beam of broken light shined upon the forest floor below. This tranquil air within the still bore no sound, no shriek or shrill, nothing but the silence of the gloom. Then suddenly the woodwind hummed, feathered hands on stale winds drummed, and shadows danced within the scattered light. Spellbound by what might impend, I watched the mighty form descend to light upon a weathered oaken stump. A single beam of evening's end enveloped the golden frame therein, an eagle stretching mighty wings aloft. For a moment it seemed time stood still, and every truth became surreal, and all that I could do was simply watch. Before the beams of light could fade into the forest glade, thundering past the trees into the dark, I listened as his wings beat down the shadow winds of Greenwood's crown, until silence once again reclaimed its place. For quite some time I sat alone to let the moment see the sown deep within the holdings of my thoughts. Now many years have long since passed, the woods replaced by human cast. Both eagle and the wind have gone away. But to this day I'll embrace the whim, when the sun is low and its light grows dim, to walk into some long forgotten place. Then I'll sit within my manse, while light and shadows and silence dance, listening for the beating of the drum. Perhaps one day he'll find this his way back to a wood both green and fey, where the sun is lighting down upon a stump. And as he lands his wings astride, he'll stare across the wild divide to look upon this old familiar face. When at last the sunlight fades and day surrenders to evening shade, the moment that we shared will have gone. We both will rise without a word, knowing well that each was heard at our meeting in the ether at the ending of our days. End poem.
Well, beautiful read, Pam. And, you know, this is a touching poem. It's really deeply introspective in its presentation. It has a feeling of serenity that he has when he sees this other person, this creature, and the moments that they share together are powerful and intriguing, for sure. What did you think, Pam?
Yeah, this is absolutely beautiful. This is actually something that really happened to him. I remember this one had been read before, and it's one of those that's worth bringing out again. I actually had it bookmarked on my amazing rights list. The rhythm, the flow, the meter, very much had a pole, Edgar Allan Poe-like feel to it. And I like the three-line rhyme. I like the way that he brings us into the idea of the magic and mystery behind nature and the whole idea of connection between mankind and nature, how, and if we take time to listen, it has this way of speaking to our hearts. You know, it makes me think about, like, you know, like the back, I saw an eagle as we were driving into town, and it was sitting on, you know, eating a dead deer on the side of the road. And, you know, it's like, it's so sad to see the deer had gotten hit and died. But at the same time, I couldn't help but, you know, just feel a sense of awe, because this, you know, eagle had its wings stretched out, and it was just, it really was. It's just a close up, you know, they're such magnificent looking birds. So yeah, this is definitely a beautiful write and very well done.
Absolutely. Just a wonderful comment, yeah. Thank you, C.L. Howard, for that fabulous poem. I'm going to grab the next piece, and I will close that port with. Okay, here we go. Post this, and then I'll play the SoundCloud. Okay, there we go. And this is by Captain B2. Here we go.
Poem. Hushed visions of my homeland. I travel alone on this ship, severed from family and friends, my only traveling companion on this journey as I cross the beautiful, eternally dark, fathomless ocean by the moonlight and memories of my homeland. As I stand by the railing, the sea breeze brushing my hair, I am overcome by the wistful desire to return to a simpler, happier time in my life, to my homeland. I yearn for the uncomplicated joy of a former place and time. In my imagination, I walk amid the quiet streets of my hometown. Before this moment, such an ordinary, comfortable, familiar place, full of ordinary, comfortable, familiar people. My yearning for it now is so strong and unimaginably immense. The scent of the salt spray in the wake below me brings such vivid visions of my seaside village that I need but to close my eyes and my homesick mind will carry me back to home and family and happiness. With my mind's eyes, I see myself crossing the small footbridge to the temple that stands within the ancient ginkgo grove, my small feet covered with an ocean of golden leaves, covering the path to where I go to burn incense to honor my ancestors. When I return home, I am greeted by mother, the perfumes of dinner cooking and father smoking his pipe, and the sounds of mother humming to herself while my sisters play on the porch just outside our door. Now my eyes are open, and I try to imagine so distant a place I have never been and family I have not seen. I know Auntie and Uncle only from their letters to Mother, letters from somewhere called San Francisco, a place that before seemed only a small stamp on a letter that now is a travel ticket and a satchel stuffed with all I own. All that remained after the earthquake left me by myself, alone with no family, no home, my village, no graveyard. Mother of all mothers, father of all fathers, cradle of all my ancestors, I must leave you now. I must learn a new language, adopt new customs, live a new life. Yet in my soul are the roots of my homeland, implanted forever. I travel alone on this ship, severed from family and friends, my only traveling companion on this journey as I cross the beautiful, eternally dark, fathomless ocean are the moonlight and memories of my homeland that I never will I see again.
And beautiful read, Bobby. That was a great read. And, you know, this poem just hits all the heartstrings on being alone, being without family, traveling to a land that you don't know, and you've lost everything, your family, your whole village is gone due to earthquake, and just a hard-hitting, impactful poem on the subject of love and longing, and the memories that haunt us as we go forward in our lives. Just a beautiful expression, Bobby. And what did you think, Pam?
Yeah, I have to agree. This is absolutely beautiful. You know, I like how she tells the story of a young woman leaving her homeland. And the idea that she'll be traveling to this new land, to the United States. And, you know, this takes us back in time when people traveled by ship and when they moved, like, you know, I'm guessing like 1800s. That was pretty much it. You were leaving family. You were leaving friends. You were starting life over. And it wouldn't be, you know, like it is nowadays, where if you don't get to physically see them, you at least can, you know, video chat. This was a, it has that, as you said, that sense of longing, for what we used to have. And it also gives that idea, like you said, as of moving forward. It's a story of bravery. It's a story of being willing to give up what you know to find the, you know, this idea of freedom and this idea of adventure. So it's just beautifully written and very well done.
Wonderful comment, Pam. Thank you. And just on a side note, C.L. Howard sends his love to everybody. He's going through a period of loss. He just lost his son in December of 2021. Mm-hmm. So my condolences to him. And I hope things start looking up for him. But, okay, I've got the next poem up, and this is by Cool Males. It's called The Bargain. The devil came on Sunday, of all days, and said to Bess, "I'd really love your soul," and followed up, "You know he has his ways. What wouldst thou like? Got any special goal?" You should have seen her eyes, they lit right up. "Oh, I would durst be a queen, my demon friend. Canst thou perform, or dost thou prance and yap, but art thou helpless in this realm? Pretend." Her fingers, playful, traced the glowing line the pentagram had burned into the rug. "This realm, your highness, or perhaps of mine?" The devil chuckled, his demeanor smug. "This one for now," she answered. "Do you proceed? We'll think about the other when I'm gone." The devil nodded and produced a deed. "Your signature, my lady, and it's done." He then retrieved a needle from his belt. "To prick thine finger, lady, it won't hurt." She did it quickly, though the prickling felt like a deep cut. Signed, and wiped hand on skirt. "Your sister will not carry Philip's child," the devil added. Checked the paperwork. "Disease will take her while thou art exiled. Thou will not have to see it." Face a smirk. He made a deep, exaggerated bow. "Your majesty, thou surely won't regret." Best waved him off. "No use." She made her vow and added, "A great playwright, don't forget." End poem. And, well, this is a wonderfully woven tale. It's got an excellent rhyme and rhythm to it. And, you know, it's definitely an impactful poem on the subject of making a deal with the devil and to get what you're after. And I thought he did a fantastic job in presenting that. And what did you think, Pam?
Well, you know, this is really cool. I like it. You're right. It does have wonderful rhyme flow. It's great storytelling. You know, I can't help but wonder if this is about a real historical person, you know, like mentioning and added a great playwright, don't forget. Maybe it's a poem about Shakespeare's mother making a deal with the devil. Although it does mention the queen and Philip, you know, you know, so I don't know. My gears are turning in my head. You know how that happens sometimes? You read a poem and you wish you could be like just Googling and researching the same time you're reading it, at the same time you're commenting on it. Because I get the feeling that this is actually a made up story based on a real person. And the fact that they had a great playwright in the end, I automatically think of Shakespeare. But I like the use of the more old fashioned, I forget what it's called, but that kind of thou and thus type language. And you should have seen her eyes. They lit right up. I would durst be queen, my demon friend. Cast thou perform, or dost thou prance and yap? But art thou helpless in this realm pretend? Just wonderful lines on, you know, that deal struck when you find yourself, when somebody finds themselves being helpless. So just an excellent write and very well done.
Well, that was a great comment, Pam. Thank you. And I've got the next poem up, if you wouldn't mind, please, Pam.
I would be happy to. All right. Passing Glances by CRL17. And it goes like this. In passing glances, we smile, never saying a word. There are so many things I will never know about you. I want to know the sound of your sighs, your tender kisses in the dark of night, the power and strength of your desire, the sweetness of your warm embrace, and the pebbles inside your soul. I feel you are all that I'd ever want as we pass each other each day. Every time I reach out to you, you go further away. End poem.
Great read, Pam. And I really liked it. You know, it really speaks to what could be if you stepped out of your box and made that move. And, you know, the wondering is what will get you. Really is just a powerful poem on the subject of wanting and longing for somebody and not being able to step outside the box until she's too far away to make that contact. So, yeah, just a fantastic pen. And what did you think, Pam?
Yeah, I really like and appreciate this. It has a strong emotional impact. And yeah, you're right. Oftentimes it seems like the greatest heartache and the greatest regret happens when we keep ourselves inside that box and refuse to reach out and refuse to try. I really like that this goes into the idea of it's not just the physical desire, you know, like he wants to know the tender kisses and the sweetness of the embrace, but also, and the pebbles inside your soul, you know, the little, every ache and pain, even the smallest ones, that may seem an inconvenience to other people, is something that they want to know about this person. And, there's a real emotion, like I said, emotional impact in the idea of, you know, this person getting further and further away. So beautifully written and very well done.
That was a wonderful comment, Pam. Thank you. Okay, I've got the next poem up, and this is called Diamonds in Her Eyes by D. Edward Barnett. Picture a dream in perpetual motion where rose-colored glasses are worn for disguise. Someone you knew is casting out shadows, listening to heartbeats with a looking glass face. Mirrors and smoke are floating above, reflecting back all of your dreams as you seek someone speaking in colors and stars. Then they're gone. A girl with diamonds in her eyes, a girl with diamonds in her eyes, a girl with diamonds in her eyes, a girl with diamonds in her eyes. Tracing her steps as she lingers and wanders, where angels are dancing like the light in your eyes. Wingtip to wingtip, they drift onto moonbeams, and you're left with a moment you've been left before. Castles that float high above on the clouds, beckon with longing surprise. Angels in top hats fly past the window. Then they're gone. Then they're gone. A girl with diamond eyes, a girl with diamond eyes. A girl with diamonds in her eyes, a girl with diamonds in her eyes. End poem. I like it. I mean, it had a catchy nature to it. You know, it you can really see all this as he speaks it. You know, a dream in perpetual motion where rose-colored glasses are worn for disguise. Someone you knew is casting out shadows, listening to heartbeats with a looking glass face. Yeah, I like the contradiction in the terms there. Just a beautiful write by D. Edward Bennett. And what did you think, Pam?
You know, I have to agree. You know, this is beautifully written. You can tell it's song lyrics because of the lyrical quality and the repetitiveness. It really made me think about the song Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds by the Beatles. And in fact, it kind of had the same kind of, what's that called, surrealism type vibe to it. And there was, this was emotive in the idea of someone who so completely gives love to other people and cares about other people and what they need. But I really liked the imagery in castles that float high above on a cloud, beckon with love, longing, surprise. Angels in top hats fly past the window, then they're gone. I mean, don't you think, Gray, that this did have that kind of surrealism that you find in quite a bit of the Beatles songwriting?
Well, absolutely. No, I agree 100%, Pam.
Yeah, it was an excellent write.
Absolutely. Great comment. Thank you, Pam. Okay, I'm going to grab the next poem here. And if you wouldn't mind when you see this, Pam, please and thank you.
Yep, absolutely.
There we go.
All right. A Life to Undo by Dances with Words. A lifetime to undo how I became, since I, not of your blood, was warped by your love. Why, how, would, could anyone instill such shame upon a child's so innocent spirit, thereby embed a hole where the heart, mind, body, soul ought, no unity. You chose me as your adopted child, who knew instead a puppet was what you wanted. Well, I cut the strings one by one, dangled decades, finally became as God intended. And via such transcendent, transformative experience, through all the horrific hell of identity deconstruction, eventual reconstruction, not only have I become, thou art that, but my heart, mind, have expanded to no longer fear or hate you, nor myself. Now wishing both of us, each who we truly are, our essences, only the best ongoing end poem.
Well, beautiful read, Pam. And this is a hard-hitting poem on the subject of adoption and the games people play with that and, you know, the impact it has on the innocents and the people that come up through this sort of, you know, the evil of society, you know. Unfortunately, so many that are adopted come to suffer this kind of a fate and have to build themselves up after having been deconstructed. So congratulations to Dances with Words on his ability to change that. So just a fantastic poem. And what did you think, Pam?
Yeah, I have to agree with you. This is powerful. And I see that he won a silver on that in a contest. So that's definitely well-deserved. You know, I've known people who have been adopted, and it has been a beautiful experience for them. Their adopted parents and family are loving and supportive. But I've also known people who have been through this kind of experience where the adoption was nothing more than to fulfill the need of the person who adopted them. And it became something that was harmful and destructive towards the spirit of the child. And I like that Dances with Words brings to light that struggle that so many have gone through. The idea of being almost like purchased as an object. But what I particularly found strong about this write is that the end is all about them moving forward, about them You know, because the idea that you forgive, but you don't forget. You know, you forgive, but you don't have to make the person part of your life. And I like how this is all about the healing, the moving on, and learning to love yourself. So beautifully written and very well done.
Great comment. Thank you, Pam. Okay, so I've got the next poem here, and it's by S. Sharp, and he has a sound card, so we'll play that.
Perception. Madness sleeps with perception. Does the night rise in the eastern sky, born to command eternity? Black smoke emitted from mechanical stars, darkness from which we all arise. Or does night fall upon the dagger of light, the blade that darkness impales itself upon, a just ending Shakespearean nightfall? It is a question as that of Stockton's Lady or the Tiger. Decisions of human insight, beliefs, and biases must decide. Does the night live and rise, or does the night fall and die?
And in his author's notes, he says, footnote, Lady or Tiger is a short story by Frank Stockton in which the reader is asked to decide the fate of a pauper who dared to love a princess. And, fascinating poem on the subject of night. I really liked it. I mean, it was really hard-hitting and powerful poem. I really liked his read as well. He did a fantastic job on his read, but, the poem really makes you wonder whether, you know, darkness does live and rise, or does the night fall and die? Just a fascinating poem on the subject of night. What did you think, Pam?
Yeah, you know, I have to agree with you. It does, like, really, it is one of those that makes you think. And, you know, begs the question, you know, where does the darkness come from? I've actually never heard of or read this story, Lady or the Tiger, but I find his AN very fascinating because, you know, like when I was a teenager, I was very much into those choose your own adventure where you'd read so many like pages and then it'd bring you to like a point where you had to make a decision. Do you remember those ones, Grace?
The choose your own adventures?
Yeah, those were great. But I can't help but wonder if maybe this story is, you know, if there's other ones out there like that, and maybe this story was like almost like the father or the grandfather to the predecessor to the whole choose your own adventure. But I really like madness, how it starts with madness sleeps with perception, that often the idea of how we view things can affect our mind. It is a question as that of Stockton's Lady or the Tiger, decisions of human insight, beliefs, and biases must decide. You know, the idea that what we go through colors our perception, and our perception is what leads us to make the decisions that we do. So beautifully written and very well done, and so excellent.
Fabulous comment, Pam. Thank you. Okay, I've got the next poem up. It's called Foxglove Fields, and it's by E.J. Cool, and she has a SoundCloud. So I'll play this. Oh, I'm not seeing it.
Did you refresh your studio since the show has started?
Yeah, I have.
Okay.
No, I don't see it. But she did add one. Okay. I'll give this a read. Foxglove Fields by E.J. Cool. Fields of foxglove flowers flourish. Bell fairy jellyfish dress frills swish. Milk and cream, dapple, wind-brushed lay, digger bees slow dance in lazy sway. Shaded paths part dense forest thatch. Red-winged blackbirds, ruffled trills dispatch. Rose gold drips through the wept canopy. Petrified serpentine filigree. Shadowed laced walkway. Glow grows dimmer. Paracut, peridot, cabochons, simmer. Runnels trundle, creuse. Cotton tails, lop, under sapsucker hues. Blue morphal powder puffs, pink dusk dust. Luscious honeysuckle sings notes robust. Sphagnum moss, top rocks make pillows plush. Chime Carolina, wren, and brownwood thrush. Rain-softened earth fills summer's pot. Fungal forms feasts on fallen tree rot. Crickets whir and catadids chirr. Fireflies strobe in neon, lime and blur. Dew buds taste twilight cool and sweet. Saffron sunset's breadth sweeps night trail beat. Diaphanous tapestry swims. Heavenly pastel paradise brims. End poem. And in their author's note, she says, inspired by a walk through a lovely park near my home in Ohio, the foxglove fields were astounding and teeming with digger bees. And she took the photo and the picture. So absolutely beautiful poem. I mean, I loved her use of language in this. The linguistics were fantastic and charming. It was really poetically expressed, this place of a particular serenity where the digger bees do their thing. So just a beautiful poem. What did you think, Pam?
Yeah, I have to agree. This is absolutely beautiful. I will admit that given the title, Foxglove Fields, I was expecting a dark write because of the fact that foxglove is extremely poisonous and will cause the heart to slow down. You know, I was automatically like, oh, this is going to be dark. Someone's getting poisoned. But, you know, I was pleasantly surprised. I mean, obviously, I enjoy dark writes. I enjoy a good poisoning story. But, you know, the fact that she takes us into this walk that she went on where she observes, and I love that picture she took, she observes the beauty of nature and then takes time to share it with us. I really like blue morphal powder puff, pink dusk dust, luscious honeysuckle, sings notes robust. There's a wonderful end and inner rhyme to this. I also like the use of the sound, like crickets whir and katydids chirr, you know, and the idea of the movement, the sound, and the beauty of nature that's all there if we just take time to observe, rewritten, and very well done.
That was a great comment. Thank you, Pam. Okay, so I'm going to grab the next poem here. And this one is by Weaver of Dreams. And I'm going to play the SoundCloud for this one. Here we go. Weaver, there we go.
I was playing with a Ouija board with some drunken mates last night. We got the usual mass murderer who seemed to be trapped in hell. Then there was a dubious spirit who claimed to be my grandma, but didn't know my pet name for her. She was dismissed as well. We felt a shift in the energy. Here was something new, interesting. We asked who was contacting us. Then saw, you can call me L. I said, why the L should we? And smiled smugly. Little did I know what we had unleashed. We found out soon all was not well. L spelled out, I come with a warning. One of you will die tonight. We looked at each other, saw disbelief, as well as doubt and fear. I threw the board out the window, shouted, in God's name be gone. Absurd. No one would die tonight. We laughed, had another beer. That should have been the end of it. But when I got to bed that night, I felt malevolent eyes watched me in the veil between here and there. El wanted contact with this world, and he thought he had found a way. "It's not happening, El," I said. "There are no corporeal vacancies here."
I liked it. It was a fascinating poem on the subject of a Ouija board and being drunk with your friends using it. You know, this L, this mysterious L, appears and makes your night scary and foreboding. But then the ending, "It's not happening," I said, "L." Or, "Not, it's not happening, L," I said. "There are no corporeal vacancies here." That was a great line. Excellent write, Weaver of Dreams, and excellent read as well. What did you think, Pam?
Oh, I have to agree with you. That ending is a great line. You know, Weaver has this great way of combining darkness with humor. And, you know, like, I like the use of the word dubious, a dubious spirit. Who claimed to be my grandma but didn't know my pet name for her. She was dismissed as well. I really like, we asked who was contacting us, then saw, "You can call me L." I said, "Why the L should we?" And smiled smugly. You know, so just a clever write all the way through and very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment, Pam. Thank you. Okay, I've got one more by E.J. Cool, if you wouldn't mind, please, Pam.
I would be happy to. All right. Sorry. Perfume by E.J. Cool, and it goes like this. The thick perfume of dank death swirls summer sweat in swart coils, every rank fermented breath flaunting ripe and rotten spoils. Clumps of spotted tawny fur, sticky with red confiture, and the odd entangled burr, nightshade of an enchanter. A white-tailed fawn's scant remains, picked to bones and strewn about, pumped back into black soil's veins, where from budding bluebells sprout. Pink primrose and ghost flower, prairie fire and germander, wreath of woodland secular with sacraments of nature and poem.
And in her author's note, she says, "Enchanter's nightshade, bluebells, primrose, ghost flower, prairie fire, and germander are all wildflowers found in Ohio." This is a kind of a dark poem, but with beauty growing from that darkness. So I thought it was just a fabulous poem. The thick perfume of dark death swirls summer's sweat in swarth coils, in every rank fermented breath, flaunting ripe and rotten spoils, and then clumps of spotted tawny fur sticking with red conifer, and odd entangled fur, nightshade of enchanter. You know, you can picture this dead animal here, and with its remains picked to the bone and strewn about, and then pumped back into the soil with its growing of the flowers to mark that site. So just a fantastic, eerie poem. And what did you think, Pam?
You know, I have to agree. Eerie is perfect word to describe this. And I like, Gray, when you said that the beauty grows from the darkness within the poem. And it's so true. It's a real look. It's beautiful imagery on the wildflowers mentioned, but it's a very realistic look at the fact that, you know, if things didn't die, if animals didn't die, birds didn't die, baby, you know, you think of this, the scant remains of the fawn seeping into the soil and becoming this fertilizer for the flowers. You know, it is because nature has a certain cycle that requires death in order that life may become. So beautifully written and very well done.
Absolutely. A great comment. Thank you. And, okay, so now we're going to go back to the reading list here. I'm going to post the next poem. And if you wouldn't mind when you see this, Pam.
All right. The Hurricane by Darren Mossman. And it goes like this. When the nor'easterly wind rattled your windows and doors, as the fallen limbs and leaves blanket the forest floors, the starlight is extinguished, the trees, they sigh and moan, attached with pre-name, the approaching cyclone. The rain floods sideways, they batter and splatter and drive, its own means and ends to conquer and divide. As suddenly as its clouds appear, its wind they back and veer. I pray this is the last hurricane that savages us this year. End poem.
Excellent rhyme and flow to this poem. I mean, you know, doors, floors, moan, cyclone, and then drive, divide, veer, year. Beautiful end rhymes on this throughout. And, you know, it's a fascinating look at hurricanes and the power that they have, you know, the fear and the trepidation that comes along with that, and praying that it's the last hurricane of the year. And, just a epic poem on the subject of hurricanes. And what did you think, Pam?
Definitely epic. I like that this brings us into the imagery, like, of the sound of the wind, the rain that goes sideways, you know, and how, you know, the personification of the storm itself with, you know, splatter and drive its own means and ends to conquer and divide. Almost, you know, like really the idea of a storm conquering and dividing gives an essence of its power. And, I do like that ending. Let's pray this is the last hurricane that savages us this year. So excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. Okay, so I'm going to grab the next poem here. And I will read this here once I get to it. Okay. And this next poem is by Doc Frank, and it is called Garden Jubilee, Celebrated Garden's 50-Year Anniversary. The daffodils were rainbow colors. Beetles chased red ants under the mums. The hibiscus glorious in bright indigo blue. Next to garden, a majestic flamingo swan in the adjacent clear blue rippling lake. 50th anniversary Jubilee was a wonderful wonderland of colors. Buffet included mozzarella sticks and chocolate mousse, festival queen in translucent pink gown, at times cheerful. Waiters were speedy in filling empty champagne glasses. The setting was truly befitting such an important occasion. End poem. And so this is based off a word bank, which I find fascinating. And his words were Jubilee, cheerful, flamingo, speedy, daffodils, rainbow, indigo, chocolate, mozzarella, and translucent beetle. He did a wonderful job with his word bank. I mean, it's flawless. It really does paint a beautiful picture of this garden celebrating its 50th year. So you can just see how beautiful that day was. So excellent, right, Doc Frank? And what did you think, Pam?
Yeah, it's really nice how we've been getting these poems tonight. With flowers, I think you've made some great choices here, Gray, in poems that you chose to exhibit. I like the idea of a garden that's growing and changing and flourishing throughout 50 years, and the idea of celebrating the colors and the beauty of each individual flower. I mean, and this is lovely all the way through, but I was particularly drawn to 50th anniversary Jubilee was a wonderland of colors. Buffet included mozzarella sticks and chocolate mousse. So just a delightful imagery and very well done.
Absolutely. Thank you, Pam. Good comment. And I'd like to welcome caller area code 303. Is that you in Fashions?
That's me. Yeah, that's me.
Great. Awesome.
Hello?
Thank you for calling in. Hi, I appreciate you calling in. So I'm going to post your poem, Earth Fashion, if you wouldn't mind reading it for us, please.
Okay. Right now?
Yes, please.
Okay. Treebeard, Beyond the Realm. This was written in memorial of Tolkien and his trilogy. A magic passage, enter here and follow beams of light to draw you on to greener fields and fill you with delight. These mighty legs sustain much life in honor of this earth. As they draw goodness, seed the soil, and to much life give birth. You will be led to verdant realms and tread the velvet moss to find what beauty beckons you to follow there across. In your pursuit of earthly dreams and heaven's glimpse to see if light-filled realms and magic kingdoms do exist indeed. While whispered voices fill your mind and scents pervade the air, reminding you of other worlds and how you traveled there, you're drawn by love and go beyond. You travel without fear, encounter beauty, beast, and man, no harm to draw you near. With arms that reach beyond what's seen and tendrils strong and bold, he so draws near all that has been engaged in new and old, and so maintains pulsating force to span the worlds in girth, life, death, and then rebirth.
Beautiful read. And I loved your poem. I mean, you know, it's descriptive and it's engaging. It's definitely an intriguing poem, you know, but you wonder about this magical land and the fantasy of being there. And, you know, you express that beautifully. So well done. Excellent job, Earth Passions.
Thank you. Anyone who's read The Hobbit and those things will probably make the connection easily.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Pam, what are your thoughts?
Oh, this is absolutely beautiful. Well, first of all, let me say, Earth Passions, that I'm really glad that you were able to call in and read your poem, because it's always so wonderful to hear the poet's own voice in their poetry. It's been many, many years, like junior high decades ago, that I've read The Hobbit. But the character of Treebeard, you know, like at least the name stood out to me, so I recognized that. I thought this had wonderful rhyme and flow. I like how it's that idea of traveling to a magic realm, but at the same time, there's a strong sense of reality in this, and the idea to me that whether you're in a magic realm or you're in this realm, you know, in our world, there's always that circle, that connection between life and death. I really like the imagery in you will be led to verdant realms and tread to the velvet moss to find what beauty beckons you to follow there across. And then with arms that reach beyond what's seen and tendrils strong and bold, he so draws near all that has been engaged in new and old. You know, there's something, even if it's not a fantasy tale character, like there's something truly magical about trees and the way that, you know, certain animals and flowers and moss are all, and people are all attracted to them, like as if, you know, they're the center of life, which they are for a lot of people and animals. So I think this is beautifully written and very well done.
Thank you.
Great poem.
I just saw some images of the redwoods, and I have never seen them in person, but that would be my ultimate dream.
Oh, that would be wonderful.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for that.
And thank you for calling in, Earth Passions. Are you able to hang out with us, or do you have to go?
Oh, I can stay a little while. I just came in all muddy from outside watering. It's been incredibly hot here.
Right, okay.
So
I can take
a little break.
Awesome. Appreciate it. Okay, I've got the next poem up. It's called Papa Dada, and it's by Eric Svensson. So I will play that sound clip.
Papa Dada dance, libertine, oh libertine, let's parry, party, shine, dine upon wondrous exploration, grey gravitas begs exfoliation, layered onion rings lunge, G-force, freefall plummet, plunge, do the Dada dance. Creative minds love to parry party prance. Dervish wool through uncertainty. Paintbrush and pen tarry not. Parry party in search of destiny. Libertine, oh libertine, hop, skip, jump out of the box. But there is no box to contain, restrain, inquisitive creativity. Art's early quantum field pathfinders triggered society's rigged spiderweb control. Reality chop suey, sliced, diced, and dissected. Do you see what you get? Circumspect creativity asks, do you get what you see? Heady hopscotch, impressionism, pointillism, Dada dance, pen and paint picadillos of an adventurous French avant-garde painter. Libertine, oh libertine, forever spring, season of jubilant renewal. Busy bee artist buzz. Sought creative pollen, yeah, there and elsewhere. Castanet celebration consecration. Fearless conquistador sought new land. Do you see what you get versus do you get what you see? Patty pliable reality exposed through artistic archaeology. Forever spring. Pen and paint prophet led me back to Canaan. End poem.
Wow, beautiful read. He has a wonderful reading voice. And, you know, this poem is deeply metaphoric, and it's rich in that metaphorical nature. You know, it really speaks to the art and artists and their roles in our lives and what we perceive as reality. And I thought this was a fascinating poem. What did you think, Pam?
Yeah, I have to agree with you. It is a fascinating poem and definitely rich in metaphor and imagery. And, you know, I like the use of the word libertine over and over again, libertine being a classical word, a word that's not used very often for somebody who basically made choices without any moral or ethical guidance. You know, basically whatever pleased them to do, they would do it and didn't think about any consequences. I also like the reference to Dadaism artwork because, you know, with the, and to the artwork in general where he says, circumspect creativity asks, do you get what you, heady hopscotch impressionism, pointillism, da-da dance, pens and paint, picadillos of an adventurous French avant-garde painter? It's that whole idea of art that no longer fits into a box that society had wanted it set in. I also liked the end and wonderful alliteration throughout in this powerful imagery. Do you see what you get versus do you get what you see? Putty, pliable reality exposed through artistic archaeology, forever spring pen and paint, prophet led me back to Canaan. Canaan being the land of milk and honey, the promised land, and the idea that we can bring ourselves, be led to the promised land through artwork, through creativity. I think this is beautifully written and very well done.
Great comment. Thank you, Pam. Yeah, I thought it was well done, too. And Earth Fashion has left us because she had bad audio, so she won't be with us any further. But thank you for calling in, Earth Fashion. I appreciate it. Okay, so I've got the next poem, if you wouldn't mind reading this, Pam. It's for Essa Machiba.
I would be happy to. Dimension of Thought by Essa Machiba. We live in this world, our minds filled with images and illusions, until our vision is cleared. When we are summoned to return alone and given the key to unlock the door, spiritually rising in an entirely new dimension of thought, untying each and every knot so that the soul may soar, flying free on a journey beyond all boundaries. Now be silent and listen to the Creator's words, whisper great secrets, unveiling knowledge of the ages. End poem.
Excellent read, Pam. And this is a lovely poem, about being in touch with oneself and with the Creator himself, learning to untie every knot so that the soul may soar, flying free on a journey beyond all boundaries. We can, as humans, do that, I believe. We can take flight and soar, and we can communicate without, modern equipment. We can use the heart as a beacon to the ones we love, and they will hear it and feel it, as far as I know. Just a beautiful, right, and connection, and, being connected with the Creator. So excellent write and fantastic read, Pam. What did you think, Pam?
Oh, I definitely have to agree with you. There is this way that the spirits, our spirits communicate with other spirits. This is so beautiful. It's always a pleasure to read Asama's work. Whenever, she writes so beautifully to Rumi prompts, because it has the same spirituality that her writing has. I really did like you untying each and every knot so the soul may soar, flying free on a journey beyond all boundaries. And it's a sad reality of life that we tie ourselves up in too many knots, that we limit ourselves too much, that we don't know the power that we have inside us. And I like this, how this is about, as you mentioned, that nonverbal communication, and I like that it's about unveiling and gaining that knowledge that is out there and ready to be grabbed. So beautifully written and very well done.
Fabulous comment, Pam. Thank you. Okay, I've got the next poem up. It's by Flora Holguin, and she has a SoundCloud, so I will play that.
Pinafore, a poem by Florilene. Worn, filthy and rough pinafore, do you miss me when I'm gone? Entangled, lost and bound to me on dank nights, pellet stove heat rising to blushing thick heights. Obsessively longing the pleasures of petting my olive chiffon, O pinafore that I adore. melting sweet bonbon. Dark, dainty stars of anise twirling in heavy cream delights. Cluttered, dusted spaces yielding such sticky, sticky bites. Do you not burn and tip for my kneading grip, my handsome apron? As the artist of your eats, I know you weep. Frothy arrivals, stiff peaks, whisking seasons into your finish. Damp cloth of desire with a pinch here and a dash there, I seep. Mingling and tingling while we steep. Crafty morsels so delish, the sweet and savory dish you torch and reap.
Beautiful read. Beautiful read on that. And I thought it was engaging and intoxicating. It really has a dreamy kind of quality to it. And, you know, it's full of passion and desire. And then mingling and tingling while we steep, crafting morsels so delish, the sweet and savory dish you torch and reap. Yeah, just a fascinating poem. Beautifully written and excellently expressed. What did you think, Pam?
Well, I think this poem got so heated up that the smoke from it caused you to start coughing. That's what I think.
Absolutely.
Yeah, this is a beautiful, sensual write. I can see why it had won gold in the Art of Seduction contest that it was in a couple years ago. Definitely well-deserved. You know, this is very passionate. I liked the rhyme in it. And sometimes there's something about rhyme that sometimes it softens poems or it makes them more bouncy. So to create such vivid sensuality with spot-on rhyme, I think, takes quite a bit of talent. And there is something very seductive about cooking and eating, and I like how she brings that out. Oh, pinafore that I adore, melting sweet bonbon, dark, dainty stars of anise, swirling in heavy cream delight. She really brings us into the textures and the smells of cooking and the sensuality of it. So beautifully written and very well done.
Fantastic comment, Pam. Thank you. Okay, I've got the next poem, and it's called Alone on My Side of the Bed by Forgotten Dreams. I swallow the afternoon, slate shadows sliding down, chilling chest and leaving me hollow. Eyes blur with ache, burning like chopped onions. Ship anchor limbs hang heavily, pulling me deeper. Crumbling, I exhale, faded memories. End poem. Wow, that was haunting in its sadness and its loneliness. You know, you can feel such a forlorn, melancholic, powerful energy coming from this poem. It's gritty and it's raw, and it really, you know, expresses how some people wake up, you know, to the weight of the day and how it holds them there, and they can't even get out of bed. So, yeah, just a beautiful poem on the subject of loneliness and depression. What did you think, Pam?
You know, I have to agree with you. It's just beautiful and the wonderful brevity. You know, I'm always impressed by a well-written brevity that gets its point across, and only 35 words in this one. And you know, it's really difficult. You can't really separate any one part because they all blend so nicely into the next. But there is that second stanza that stands out the most to me. You know, eyes blur with ache, burning like chopped onions, ship anchor limbs hang heavily, pulling me deeper. Like you said, you know, it's that idea of not wanting to get out of bed, you know, because everything just hurts emotionally. And I like the mention of the eyes burning like chopped onions, the idea that, you know, like when you chop onions and you just cry uncontrollably. Like, you know, that thought of having no control over the tears that come. So beautifully written, very well done.
Great comment, Pam. Thank you. Grab the next one up, if you wouldn't mind, please, Pam.
All right. Please Tell My Heart by Gardening Delight. Do you find yourself choking up in the middle of mundane activities at the most unsuspecting moments, eyes water for the one who is gone, squeezing your throat closed, lava wells up in your chest, a small explosion? I do. Mourning isn't for cowards. A stealth bomber wouldn't surprise any better than these tears for the deceased. What about myriad questions that nag? Did I treat him well, or did I fail? Was I abrupt with him when he was so ill, impatient, or uncaring? How often will I ask these things of myself? When will it be acceptable to be imperfect, cry freely for what you've lost, breathe, inhale today's crisp, sweet air, heal, mend your own brokenness? No one is going to do it for you, though some will assist. It's okay to be less than perfect, to regret, to apologize, hoping he can hear. Mend the torn fragments of your being. Be loving with yourself. Recovery will be yours if you stay determined. End poem.
Well, beautiful read, Pam. And that's a touching poem. I mean, it's very, it grabs the heartstrings, and you feel for this person as they're choking up, crying, just in the middle of a mundane activity. And, you know, I think we've all been here at the loss of somebody where their loss just reaches out and grabs you by the throat and, you know, wells lava up in your stomach. And, that pain is palpable in this, right? But you do need to heal, and you do need to move on. And you can express your guilt to that person, even though they're gone, hoping they can hear. And just a fast poem. What did you think, Pam?
Yeah, this is absolutely beautiful. And you're right. I think many people can relate to this sense of loss when somebody dies and you just get unexpectedly, like the tears come, and like as it says, in the most mundane times. What I like, though, is that it's not just about the grief itself and the loss, but from healing from it and forgiving yourself for whatever, like those questions. Like, to me, obviously, this is what, I don't know if it's a true to her life poem or if it's a character, like a made-up story. But there are things like this that do happen to people where they have like either a child, a spouse, a parent that's dying of an illness like cancer, and they are their caretakers. And being a caretaker is a difficult job. Caring constantly for other people and setting your own needs and wants aside can be emotionally draining. And I can imagine, as I'm reading this, someone who snaps at someone they love, and then when they pass on, thinking to themselves, was I loving enough? Was I, patient enough? And then the idea of learning to forgive yourself, learning to acknowledge that you're only human, and that it, the poem says, it's okay to be less than perfect. So I thought this was beautifully written and very well done.
Ooh, that was a great comment, Pam. Thank you. Okay, I'm going to grab the next poem here. Okay, here we go. Oh, wrong link. Okay, here we go. And this is by Griswold. Miss Griswold, he was a pretty funny guy. It's called Tijuana on Tequila. In a circular motion with his pointer finger, the good doctor indicated she was batshit crazy. dress embroidered in evergreen, foaming from the mouth, knickers perpetually in a bunch. The intern licked a lollipop, slurping with overbite, while the nurse ate pistachio ice cream at her desk. The mural the girl had painted on the wall was like Tijuana on tequila. The nutcases are often the most creative. It was a fantastic poem on the subject of, you know, sitting in the waiting room of this mental hospital, and as the nurse is eating pistachio ice cream at her desk, and this painting that reminds him of tequila, or Tijuana on tequila. Beautiful, right? Fantastically humorous. And what did you think, Pam?
Oh, yes, definitely fantastically humorous. It's good to see a write by Griswold. You know, he always has such a great sense of humor. I noticed in his AN he said that he always takes, does word bank writes, which this is, and does them in order, which gives it an extra challenge. I don't know if I could do that. It would definitely be a challenge. I really like the imagery of the intern with the lollipop slurping with overbite while the nurse ate pistachio ice cream at her desk. I picture that. I can almost picture that as a movie scene. And then the ending, the nutcases are often the most creative. You know, that is funny, but at the same time, it is true. It is very interesting how many creative people suffer from mental illness. I mean, just think about Van Gogh, who painted a lot of his paintings were the scene from outside his window when he was, in a mental hospital. And you know, so just a really clever write. Very well done.
That was a great comment, Pam. And so that was the last of our poems, Pam. If you wouldn't mind looking for a piece while I read one, that would be great.
Sure, I'd be happy to do that.
Okay, so I'm going to post a poem here. And it's called Gently Go Tiptoeing by Gray Eyes Smith. Gently go tiptoeing in the darkness of my nature, where there lies a beast in wait. Dare not sweat a drop, or he will taste you in the air, and your bones will satiate. Whisper not a call of reprieve as you seek retreat, for he will sweep you off your feet. Understand the nature of this man, as he will eat you alive any way he can. From the tip of your toe to your earlobe, he will lick the taste of your fear and suckle the salt inside of your savoring each move you make as you pretend to escape, knowing you are the wine inside the grape. And so he crushes you from the inside out, getting high on the liquid honey of your vines. Laced in the euphoria of your ecstasy, you come undone inside my darkness, and the light is no longer a necessity, bathed in the temptation of my caress. And poem. What did you think, Pam?
Oh, a wonderful read there, Gray. Oh, my goodness. There's a very dark and haunting feel to this, even though, you know, the title itself is lighthearted and Gently Go Tiptoeing. And there's a lightheartedness in the idea of ecstasy, like, you know, enjoyment itself. But, that you know, it feels like understand this nature of man as he will eat you alive any way he can, from the tip of your toe to your earlobe. He will lick the taste of your fear and suckle the salt inside your tear. It is a powerful, dark rite. You know, it makes me think of The Pusher Man by, who's that group that sings the Pusher Man song or the Magic Carpet Ride? You know?
Yeah.
You know what? I
do.
Yes, you know exactly what I'm talking about. And I know who I'm talking about, but I can't think of it. Like, they're a well-known group, but it has that feel to it. Yes, that's it. Steppenwolf. Man, love some Steppenwolf. Savoring each move you make as you pretend to escape, knowing you are the wine inside the grape, and so he crushes you from the inside out, getting high on the liquid honey of your vine. I like that you say pretend to escape. So there's this idea to me of a very erotic role playing where, you know, pretending to want to escape, but really wanting to be held and crushed. So just a beautiful sensual rite on temptation, and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. I appreciate that. Great comment.
All righty. So what you got for us, Pam?
All right. Well, what I got for you is definitely not sensual. So it is poetry and skulls biting down on the raw edges. And it goes like this. Poetry and skulls biting down on the raw edges. Symposium meat strung on the grit of grace, violence in the metaphors, channeling the mojo of chalk outlines, wit spit upon the tabernacle of the impractical shoe fly like pie in the sky, and the prosthetic pepper pickers are licking the knees of cannibalism. Children of the corn rake the coals, chisel the gristle, to form a sidewalk where dogs dump a liter of lithium, charges in the whack alleys, striking cords of strippers, paradigm the virgin stone, smacked along the jism kiss of a jaguar lacquer, fixed in the gleam of brown bag and flames, fountain of youth lunching in a puddle, skipping the kippers of a holy roller, en masse to the train station. And poem.
Wow, that was fantastic read, Pam. And, you know, there's, it's definitely an abstract, right, full of deep metaphors. And you can see so many different things in this poem. Poetry and skulls biting down on the raw edges, symposium meat strung on the grit of grace. You know, just that right there is epic. And then children of the corn rake the coals, chisel the gristle to form a sidewalk where dogs dump a liter of lithium. I mean, you know, that's some hard-hitting, powerful stuff, Pam. Just a beautiful expression of fantasy and poetry in motion. So beautiful, right, Pam? Would you like to say anything about your poem?
Well, you know, it was inspired by the artwork attached to it. And sometimes when I write abstract, I like to not necessarily have an exact message, but a feeling I create. You know, like to me, the whole idea in this is that, you know, there's this violence and horror going on in the world. And, you know, the oftentimes inspires poetry and artwork. It also, you know, to me, you know, was about the ridiculousness of how even the small acts of violence start to add up. And the holy roller and mass to the train station was to me, because there are times that I do try to make points within my poetry, but that part right there was very much about how those who claim to care, those who say it's part of their religion to care, are oftentimes running away when the shit hits the fan. So, you know, that's I guess that's what I have to say. So thank you, Gray.
Absolutely. Thank you for sharing that. That was wonderful. And you did a beautiful job with it. So great job.
And wonderful show tonight.
Thank you. Yeah, I appreciate that. It's been a pleasure having you on the show, and I can't tell you how much I appreciate you calling in and sharing your time, and your voice and your mind and your heart. Would you like to say anything about any shows coming up?
Oh, sure. I would be happy to. So Sunday is Father's Day, and Rex is having a show for that where you bring your father or, you know, a father figure's favorite music. And he also is running a contest for Tuesday's After Midnight show, which features quotes from Mick Jagger. You know, of course, I always say check out all the contests and topic boards put out by our late night poets, hosts and hostesses. What I got going on is for Wednesday for the Art of Seduction, I have a contest called Gold Rush, and it's got a lot of plenty to choose from. I think I ended up putting 37 different pieces of photography and quotes that go around the theme of that, of gold, like gold body paint, gold glitter, you know, quotes like love is the only gold. And so check it out, everybody, and, you know, see if there's anything that inspires you.
Awesome. Great. Thank you for appearing. And, yeah, thank you for calling in tonight and sharing your heart, your mind, your voice, and most especially your time, Pam. Much love, and you have a great night.
You too. Thank you.
Bye-bye.